We are off and rolling Thursday, July 23rd, 2026, and it's time for the Gabe Kuhn Show. Welcome in. You can follow the show on Facebook and on X. Just type in Gabe Kuhn Show in the search bar, hit the follow button. You'll get our rundown Monday through Friday and all of our content. I am Gabe Kuhn, your host, on X at G_Kuhn71, alongside, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, and executive producer of the program, Connor Dunning on X at CDunning99. Connor, good to see you, brother.
What's up, man?
How you doing? Doing all right?
Doing very well. Doing very well.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. We have a lot to get to on the show today. A bunch. SEC Media Day's final day with an old friend at the podium. Ryan Silverfield in his first SEC Media Days at Arkansas. There's a lot to get to there, I think, because we were talking about his aura heading into SEC Media Days. You had Arkansas fans superimposing discount tire polos on top of the headshots, his first headshots at Arkansas. So he had to answer a bunch of questions about that. And then he took a nice little pot shot at another American coach that is now in the SEC. We'll get to that. But it was fun to see my guy out there today. Talked to him on the phone last week, and I feel he was ready. Someone got him prepped for the questions he was going to be asked today. But we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We'll get to SEC Media Days, bottom half of this hour. But we're going to start with some Grizzlies here in a second. And then, Connor, I went to open practice today for Tiger basketball. And I have some takeaways. Nothing crazy. It was, you know, it mixed up the teams. You know, no way of knowing a starting five right now by any stretch of the imagination. Got my first look at Nemanja Popovic, the 24-year-old. Who's come over from the Euro Leagues. So that was cool to see. And I do have to give a shout-out to Jerry Ding. I'll explain why when we ultimately get to that at about 4:30. Blitz at 5:30. As far as guests are concerned on today's show, I got to see him this morning, hence why he's coming on the show. Talk a lot of Memphis sports. Matt Infield will join at 4 o'clock. And then 5 o'clock, I'll see if I can get an answer out of a clutch. I wouldn't call him a rep, but at least an employee, Kyron Samuels, who's a scout on the football side for super agent Nicole Lynn in the NFL. But I want to see if he has any idea about the LeBron James saga. And what are the new updates? We have fake reports and real reports. Last I saw, he wanted to get AD or Kyrie on a team with him, but that's not going to be possible. Shams Charania said that's not what he's waiting for, so we still are back at square one. What is he actually waiting for? There's also a report out there that he is angry that Adam Silver is quote-unquote, and I'm doing the hardest air quotes you've ever seen right now. If you see us on the stream, you can see him. He doesn't like Adam Silver quote-unquote rushing him. How do we feel about that, Connor?
I'm annoyed by it. This is the most annoyed I've ever been with LeBron in his entire career.
And
the indecision is driving me insane.
Before we get into the Grizzlies news of the day, which has to do with D'Angelo Russell and a potential addition, a player that's in the Western Conference, that's in trade talks, that the Grizzlies may be interested in, didn't get your opinion on the Heat introductory press conference, public-private thing. I don't buy it. I'm sorry.
So, to be honest, as someone who worked for a, you know, sports department, you set things up like that in advance just in case sometimes. And
sure,
it probably accidentally got published. I don't think it's any smoking gun by any means.
Okay. I mean, that's not the – mine's tinfoil hat. My thought is tinfoil hat more than what you're saying.
Mine isn't.
Okay.
It's a very normal thing that happens and somebody accidentally hit publish when they shouldn't have. Okay. It's as simple as that. Because
I did see on
people, it's not as easy as, like, some people were trying to be like, it takes 10 minutes to put stuff. Like, no, it doesn't. It takes longer than that. You have to put in graphics. You have to put in, like, what you want it to look like. You have to do timestamps.
People did see on LinkedIn that they had a junior and a senior social media position open the day after. I don't know if they fired anybody. We have not gotten full reports on that. But considering there are positions open on the social media team for the Miami Heat, maybe that's a possibility.
Here's the way I would put it. Of all of the people in the country who know where LeBron James is going to sign, I don't think a social media person for the Miami Heat is one of them.
Yes. But I think at this point, you know, it just adds to the performative nature of this entire thing. It just does not. It's hard for me to imagine, though, someone, a senior social media person, making that mistake. But again, you've done it before. You haven't made that mistake.
No.
But you've at least gone through the process of something like that before, and you say it's possible. Is it probable? Probably not. But that's the story that's being told to us at the moment.
You know, if he ends up going to Miami, then it may have been a true leak. But right now, I would be very surprised if this ended up being the smoking gun in the LeBron James free agency.
The thing that pisses me off, especially with the sports books and the prediction markets, is how much it moves those lines.
Right.
That's not healthy. That's not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination. Right now, as of today, according to DraftKings, Miami Heat have a minus 200 chance. In fact, looking back earlier in the week, I think they were at like plus 135. So they were second behind the Cavs. When that happened, ultimately, they become minus 200. That's not how things should work. That's not how lines should move. It reminds me of the Shams Charania draft night where it was, who was it? It was Brandon Miller. It was that draft, right? Where it's like, who's going to go to the Hornets?
Oh, yeah.
At the top of the draft, and he said, oh, they're interested in so-and-so, and ultimately ends up being Brandon Miller, but the line moved drastically, and a bunch of people put money on it based on what Shams Charania had to say. Like, that's not a healthy thing for society, man. And this is another example of that.
I just don't really understand why people, to be honest, gamble with caution anyway, because it seems like it is just completely based on internet rumors most of the time where the lines move. I don't know if I've ever actually seen like a line that ended up being what happened. I mean, like, I remember the Giannis stuff was absolutely insane.
Yep.
And so, I would caution people to throw money at something because a YouTube link posted.
I would just
It could very well be something. I just have doubts.
I wouldn't even just caution. I'd just say don't do it. That's what I would say. Don't do it.
If it were, to be honest, if it was Cleveland, I would have bigger feelings about it than I do about Miami. But that also might be my own bias coming into the thought process here. I just don't really think Miami makes a ton of sense for LeBron at this moment.
All right, let's start with some unsurprising Grizzlies in NBA news. D'Angelo Russell, according to Kelly Iko of Yahoo Sports, actually friend of the show, been on the show before. It looks like the Grizzlies and D'Angelo Russell are going to try to work together toward a resolution that would allow him to find a new home at some point this offseason. Whether it's through a buyout agreement or a trade, they're going to try to get him away. He's not believed to be a long-term piece. Very unsurprising. But like, if we're breaking down the reasons that he doesn't fit, and he just sort of started square one, he can be a ball-dominant player. You have a lot of young guys, especially in that backcourt, that you want to get involved early and often going into next year so you can get some data and figure out what's going to work going into the future at that position. And on top of that, he doesn't fit the timeline by any stretch of the imagination. He's 30 years old, and you have a young core of a 19-year-old, a 22-year-old, and a 23-year-old. You have to build smart around three guys like that to help them move into the future with guys that have like minds, with guys that are the same age. So you can sort of figure it out as you go into the future. But D'Angelo Russell, not going to be a part of this team. Connor, your reaction, nothing. Just, it's what I thought as soon as I saw they acquired him.
The moment they acquired him, we all knew this was going to be where it goes. The Grizzlies have too many young guards and too many young players that they want to have the ball in their hands. So it just doesn't make much sense for D'Angelo Russell to be on the Grizzlies. And to be honest, in the later years of his career, he needs to be somewhere where he can also compete if that's what he wants to do.
He can be a helper piece.
Yeah, he can be a helper piece. And he's not, to be honest, the Grizzlies aren't going to be competing for anything next year. So it seems to make the most sense for both sides. And D'Angelo Russell will be a solid addition for a team that picks him up. There are absolutely teams out there that can use someone like him coming off of the bench. So, this business as usual, to be honest, when I saw this. I went, oh, yeah, good.
Yep.
Good. And to be honest, I'm a little relieved because, there's always like a very small percentage chance that they do decide to hold on to these guys. But it seems like here logic worked out on both sides. So yeah. I wish D'Angelo Russell the best and welcome to the kind of Memphis Grizzlies all-star team.
I'm telling you, officially, man, the Grizzly trade acquisitions that never played for the Grizzlies, that's a hell of a list. Five plus six man is getting pretty damn good.
It's very good. It's a playoff team, at the very least.
In their primes, they could challenge for a championship.
With Prime Dwight. You got Prime Dwight on that team, yeah.
You got Prime Dwight. You got Andre.
Andre Iguodala. You got Rajon Rondo.
make some things happen.
Yeah,
man.
It's not bad.
Now, as for will he get bought out, will he be traded? That's a little more interesting. I think that's the conversation we need to have around this, because a buyout to me seems a little bit more realistic, considering the roster crunch you have to go through, right? If you trade, unless you're trading for a couple of second-round picks and draft assets, if you bring in another player, you're just sort of back at square one, probably trying to have to trim down the roster. Maybe you like that player. Maybe somebody else has to go if you like the player you bring in a trade with D'Angelo Russell. But also, worth mentioning with the trade, he's on a hold because he was traded this offseason. So they cannot make a move to trade D'Angelo Russell until we get into the month of September. So you'd have to, you know, wait a fair amount of time and then find a willing partner and find some pieces that you like with that partner in the meantime, which is certainly possible. I would say, just based on what I'm hearing and the sounds of things, I think a buyout on his contract, which is relatively low, is probably the best way forward in all reality, because you have the roster crunch and it's not a contract that you're sweating buying out. It's not some massive deal where you're going to have to wave and stretch and do all that stuff. You can just buy him out. He'll want to go where he wants to go.
Yeah, if somebody approaches you and says, listen, if you wait until September, we'll give you X for D'Angelo Russell, then you go ahead and hold on to him and you'll wait until September. But it doesn't seem like at the moment that has happened. So, yeah, it's a smaller contract. It's not that big of a deal. Go ahead and do it for him so he can hit free agency, find the team he wants to go to. Works out for both sides.
This was an interesting bit of news, and it's not from Evan Sidery, I can tell you that. It's from Mark Stein from the Stein Line and Jake Fisher from the Stein Line. It is being reported that Jordan Hawkins, who's going to be a fourth-year player, 24 years old, from the Pelicans, is in active trade discussions. The Pelicans are trying to move him, and it looks like the one team mentioned in the Stein Line by Mark Stein and Jake Fisher was the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies have been involved on 24-year-old two-guard Jordan Hawkins. And for those that are not familiar with Jordan Hawkins, he's 6'5". Has averaged about, 7-8 points per game through 3 years for the Pelicans. Has played a decent role. He's been a role player, averaging 18 minutes per game. And he has shot about 35% from three. But he comes from that Dan Hurley UConn program, clearly can take hard coaching. And he is just absolute 100% two guard, not really much flexibility in what he can do on a floor. I think he is a solid scorer. He can do it seemingly at all three levels. He has the ability to do that. It just hasn't shown through. He hasn't gotten quite the opportunities we thought he would after being drafted out of UConn, I believe, in 2023. So I could be interested in it, but considering the backcourt crunch, I do have questions about adding another body to that. I know it's mostly point guard we're talking about right now, where you have to lose some guys, move on from some guys. But I think when you just add more bodies into that backcourt rotation, you may end up in a similar situation that you are in now.
Yeah, I'm a maybe on Jordan Hawkins. I would need to see what the deal is, who's involved in the deal. His minutes went down pretty significantly last year with the addition of Jeremiah Fears to their roster.
Which makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Which definitely makes a lot of sense. And, you know, he didn't shoot great from three last year, which is the number one thing he does that out there on the basketball court. So that's why I'm like, it's an interesting player to be involved with. I wouldn't necessarily dislike it. I would just have to see what's involved, because I think that my first thought is Cam Spencer does everything Jordan Hawkins does, but shoots at a better percentage.
Right.
Now, Jordan Hawkins is bigger, so yes. I don't know if like that matters that in a huge sense to the Memphis Grizzlies.
But Jordan Hawkins is not some two-way great defender by any stretch. He doesn't really do anything better than Cam Spencer when you just truly look at the basketball aspect of it.
Agreed. I agree. Really, the only thing is he's 2 inches bigger than
he can use a little more physicality and get to the cup a little bit better, but that's not really his game.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's capable of it. If they are to add him, I think it would be, hey, 24 years old, matches the timeline, and we can project this guy to be serviceable two guard here in a couple of years, and we feel like he could be a role player for us. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination adding Jordan Hawkins is some solution going into the future at the two guard. Let's be very clear about that if they were to go down that road.
It would feel like one of those moves, again, depending on what the package would look like, where you're like, okay, good addition by the Grizzlies. Doesn't necessarily change the ceiling for next season by any means. And just someone good to have around. You know, take a flyer on him. If he works out here, great. If he doesn't, that's okay too. Again, though, I'm a little hesitant to truly believe that the Grizzlies may be involved because they have so many guys on their roster right
you
now.
You just don't want to add more to that, logjam.
Already replicate what Jordan Hawkins does well. Again, if they made the move, thumbs up. Like, I would be totally cool with adding Jordan Hawkins. It's just, I don't want to take minutes away from some of the guys that we have now.
But admittedly, coming out of college, I was a big Jordan Hawkins fan. I was absolutely a big Jordan Hawkins fan. One of the main reasons they won a national title that first year in the back-to-backs. And he really can, he has the ability to shoot the three ball at a very high level. He can handle a little bit. He's not ridiculously horrible on the defensive end. If you bring him in, it's about projection going into the future to fit the timeline next to your other guys, Cedric Howard, Zach Edey, and Cam Boozer.
Yeah, if you can get him for a small price, sure. You know, it. But again, it's why I just don't want to give up anything of substance for him.
Yeah, if it's we wait till September.
If it was D'Lo, sure.
And D'Lo.
Yeah, sure. I'd be all for that.
I would swap that. Yeah, in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. And that's where I was curious if maybe those two things are connected. Because we found out the D'Lo news, and then you found out the Jordan Hawkins connection. Could those two things be connected? And to be honest, the Pelicans kind of scream D'Lo as a team.
Absolutely. So, if they do swap that, though, you still have the same problems you have with trying to crunch this roster. And my question still becomes, okay, who are the odd men out? I think, obviously, KCP, at some point, you're going to figure out something with him.
Right. That's a given. That's a given.
Taj Gibson, you can release him, and that'll figure itself out. I have, like, Chris Murray, probably. Yeah. On the way
out.
And then Walter Clayton Jr. But you do wonder. You know, you do wonder about him. He's going into his second year, and I wonder how much you hold against, if you're Zach Kleiman in this front office, how much do I hold against him his rookie year? Right? I know he was an older rookie. He played a few years in college. But how much do I hold that against him if I did believe in him enough to at least have him as a return piece in the Jaren Jackson Jr. trade? Right? So, like, I don't know. I think if we're trying to use at least some level of production and what we've seen with our eyeballs, Javon Small is a better player right now. But I'd have to see them truly just release him or try to trade him for a, you know, washing machine and a second round pick. Before I believe that they're going to offload Walter Clayton Jr. It makes sense to us, but does it make sense to the Grizzlies front office with how young he is and the cost-controlled contract and the value of pick he was coming out of college?
Yeah, to be honest, I think that missing Summer League for him really hurt.
It could be the death blow.
It could really be. Because Javon Small, in my opinion, established himself as the third point guard on this team. I think that, you know, He won that spot in Summer League. He did everything that you wanted him to. He showed some playmaking ability. He shot the basketball relatively well. And he also just showed, I think, some athleticism that we didn't necessarily expect from Javon Small while also playing good defense. And Walter Clayton Jr. has a long road ahead of him to catch up to Javon Small. Maybe he has, you know, some sort of run during camp and preseason that changes people's minds. It's just right now, he absolutely feels like he's on the chopping block,
yes,
for sure. And it's just, I think, unfortunately, the Memphis Grizzlies have a group of young players who all play his position, and all of them have shown more NBA viability, I think, than Walter Clayton Jr. so far. So it might be best for him and the Grizzlies to just say, we wish you luck, young man, but it's going to have to be on another team.
Yeah, now, something I'm very curious about. We'll talk with Matt Infield a little bit later, but he caught up with G.G. Jackson yesterday. And I think the ongoing question about G.G. Jackson is, what do the Grizzlies envision going into this rebuild with him? Because, like, you can't lose sight of the fact that this guy was an all-rookie guy. He's going on his 22 age season. He can shoot the three. He can score at all three levels. And last year, you saw, like, actual real-life visible growth from this kid in attacking the basket, using athleticism, and being a bully. And then on the defensive end, you saw him at least attempting, as opposed to the first 2 years of his career, to be in the right place at the right time on a consistent basis. And, Connor, I think you and I probably are in lockstep on this. It's like, if the Grizzlies ever give up on Gigi, I'm going to be watching him and monitoring the rest of his career for the rest of time, because I've always been a Gigi believer since that rookie year from, it was the Grizzlies' year from hell, but he showed a lot, averaged 12 points per game. But when Matt Enfield talked to him yesterday, he said he was looking ahead to this year, and he says he has the intangibles to be a defender that's not a liability that will keep him on the floor. This, weirdly enough, I know that we've talked about it. The way he gets on the court is by being a solid, serviceable defender. This is the first time I really feel he's sort of uttered those words out of his mouth and made it clear, hey, I understand that now. And listen, understanding comes with age and experience. He's now 22. He's going on his fourth year in the NBA. It makes sense that he's now saying these things and understanding these things. But obviously, those things have to play out before we see if he's going to be a long-term piece and a part of this rebuild for the Memphis Grizzlies.
Yeah, he has said things in the past about he understands what he needs to do to get on the court. I think this is the first time he's like verbalized it specifically.
Defense.
But, you know, I think that GG Jackson has handled his NBA career very well. You know, he understood why he got sent down to the Memphis Hustle a couple of times. He understood the challenge that was to him from the Grizzlies coaching staff. And my hope is that he will be a part of this rotation next year.
I really hope.
I think he is a very talented scorer, and he showed real strides defensively last year. There are still some ways to go, but he's still a very young player. But his athleticism, I think, is a piece that this Memphis Grizzlies team absolutely needs. They are. I like the talent that the Grizzlies have, but they do not have a lot of athleticism, and that is what Gigi Jackson
and
can give you.
And contrary to what you thought before last year, I think he does kind of fit the bill for the potential new identity of this team.
Absolutely.
Last year, we saw him bully people.
When he gets downhill, it's very hard to stop him.
Truly try to shoulder into people, go finish at the rim as consistently as possible.
Yeah.
So, like, if he didn't have last year's tape, I may feel different about how he fits this team and this identity. But last year's tape, I think, did a lot of talking for him.
I agree. And when you're not going to have KCP on that roster next year, and to be honest, I think that he should be ahead of Taylor Hendricks in the rotation.
Absolutely.
He should probably be ahead of Omax in the rotation, too. I would love, and Santi's not going to be there either. There is room for GG Jackson, and I think that he has absolutely shown that he can be a part of an NBA rotation and have impact on winning basketball. He is the type of scorer that is an X factor for this Grizzlies team next season. And that is why I am rooting for GG Jackson to get minutes. And I will, to be quite honest with you, have some frustration if he does not get minutes. I don't think he's a starter right now by any means, but I do think he is on the path to where if he makes another leap next year, we very well could see GG Jackson start one day for this Grizzlies team. We're not there yet, but I think he has earned a spot in the rotation because he has seemingly accepted every challenge the Grizzlies staff has given him, worked his ass off, he's saying all the right things, and he's producing offensively. That's the type of kid that I want in the rotation. And he seems like a fan favorite too, which is a bonus.
Agree with everything you just said. Here's the only thing that I've always questioned this. This is probably like the 15th time I've asked this question, or at least brought this point up. I've never felt like the Grizzlies have the same view of GG Jackson as we do in the media and in the fan base. I feel like there's a different sort of idea of what they want from GG than what we see on a night-to-night basis when he's actually out there. Because I think most of us assume, okay, yeah, there's room for him. He should be a part of this rotation. He does some really good things, especially if you bring him off the bench. It's like a flamethrower, a offensive player, a heater off the bench, as long as he's at least somewhat viable on the defensive end. That could work really well. But I just have never gotten that sense that Zach Kleiman and this front office are fully bought into the GG Jackson experience. And I don't know if you feel that way, but that's the vibes I've always taken away with the GG Jackson experience over these 3 years.
I don't know if I fully agree with that because he wasn't ever involved in trades. And to me, this offseason felt like one where they move people who they don't see a future with.
Okay.
And Gigi wasn't included in that. I think that maybe the first season they were like, what is this kid? You know, he is a high talent that we got at the end of the draft.
Literally, a ball.
Last year, you know, he played a lot for Tomas Isolo, and he did everything Tomas Isolo asked. And that's why I think that there might just be a question mark of still what is his role going to be on a healthy Grizzlies team that is actually trying to win basketball games. I think that's the question that we need answered. And, you know, you may be right. If we start next season and GG Jackson is nowhere to be found for the first few games, then you'll be right. You'll say, oh, maybe they don't believe him in it as much. It's just he played big minutes last year for Tomas Isolo. And again, it may have been a result of circumstance, but
I think a lot of it was a result of circumstance.
He was still playing like 30 minutes a lot of time, like 28 to 30 minutes for Tomas Isolo. And my hope is that he showed enough scoring-wise. Like, he had a good field goal percentage. He shot the three ball well, improved defensively. I think there's room for GG Jackson. I would be surprised, given what the roster looks like right now and given what next season is, if he doesn't get some sort of room
leeway,
to run.
Some run,
yeah,
some
it's like, let's give him some run. Because if GG hits, he's the type of talent that can elevate this entire young core.
Without question. Without question. That's right. And on the sweetheart deal.
But I understand why
that he's on.
It definitely feels like a bit of a mystery, though, because he is so young. And unfortunately, in his years with the Grizzlies, they've never truly been competing for everything. And they've never had a long enough stretch of health from, you know, a guy like Ja Morant where we would know what they would look like when they're actually trying to compete. We know that GG's a piece where they're not competing. He gets a lot of minutes when they're not necessarily competing, right, but he has improved in those minutes every single year. So my hope is, okay, when you're actually trying to win games now and you're not tanking, my hope is that Gigi's a part of that rotation. But to your point, we'll probably get that's why I was like, Gigi not being involved in trade talks this offseason or being moved gives me a little bit of hope that they view him as at least a X factor
and
that could swing this thing.
If we want to rewind, right, like a point you could make for your side here where it's like, I don't know if I fully agree that they don't necessarily believe in him or they're not fully bought into the GG Jackson experience. At the end of the day, Zach Kleiman did draft him.
Yeah.
Zach Kleiman made the decision, hey, we're going to take him at 45. So, like, that could still be in the back of your mind. He knew it would be a build to get to GG Jackson's sort of full potential as a NBA player with this Grizzlies franchise. Maybe he's just been quiet about it because he knew this was going to be a process.
Yeah,
maybe it's as simple as that.
I truly do hope, though, that Gigi is a part of this team next year and he gets run because he is a special talent. And if he is ever able to put it together, I think whatever team he is on is going to get a real prize.
Yep.
I don't think the Grizzlies should give up on him. I don't get a sense that they're going to give up on him. I would be disappointed if they did. I'd be upset if they did.
I think this is worth saying. When I say that, like, oh, I don't know if the Grizzlies front office is fully bought into the GG Jackson experience, it doesn't mean that I think they're just going to throw him to the wolves immediately going to give up on him immediately. It's just that I feel like there's other guys on this roster that they have maybe focused on a little bit more than GG Jackson over the years.
Maybe. I think you could also say, though, they've challenged him by sending him down the hustle, and they're clearly taking his development seriously.
Yes.
They want to say, hey, this is what you need to work on. And again, I look at the way that this roster is built right now, and I'm like, there's definitely room for Gigi here.
Yes.
Like, Cam Boozer's your starting four, and then it's Gigi, Taylor Hendricks, Omax Prosper. You know, Quinn Post doesn't play the four.
Yeah.
So it's like, there is absolutely room for Gigi Jackson, and we talk about it a lot. Tomas really likes optionality, and Gigi Jackson certainly gives you that. Because he can play the four, he can play the three. He is developing as a defender. If he ever just becomes a average defender, that could be a really damn good basketball player.
Yes, correct.
Already is a good player.
Even if he becomes an average defender. But he has the physical tools to become a great defender. It's just about actually getting that out.
What's exciting is that he just, when he pops during these games, man, like, he'll drop 26 on you in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And that is the type of player, in my opinion, with his athleticism, this Grizzlies team needs, even if the defense isn't fully there yet, you need that type of guy coming off the bench where you just say, go put the ball in the bucket.
I think every Grizzlies fan, since they saw his name come across the ESPN ticker at 45th, in that draft. I think everybody has been in the mindset of, I really want this to work out.
I also just I think he's a good kid. He's really a likable player. Guy. He's a likable player. Seems to be a fan favorite. I'm always excited when he's in the game. And I think it was a big deal last year when he got sent down and he accepted the challenge. He understood it and he didn't make a stink about it. He came back up better. He did what the Grizzlies asked him to do. He understood the process of it. And I don't know, man, like that seems, with the culture that you're trying to build, he seems like he can fit into that. That personality seems like he can fit into it. So he matches the timeline very well. He's 21. Perfect. This kid's 21 still. That's crazy. He's got 3 years of NBA experience and he's 21 years old.
That's why you take him when you take him too.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. We come back. We need to talk about an old friend. An old friend, Ryan Silverfield. He had his first SEC medias today, and words were spoken, and he answered questions about Aura. Stick around for that. Aura is the distinctive and tangible atmosphere, energy, or vibe that seems to surround and emanate from a person, place, or thing. Why is it being brought up at SEC Media Days? Well, Arkansas fans, Memphis fans, college football fans saw Ryan Silverfield's first headshots at Arkansas and claimed that he had no aura at all. In fact, they went to the lengths, of superimposing discount tire polos over his Arkansas polo to try to prove this point. I think I saw there was a Subway and a Best Buy one, too. So, like, this has been an ongoing joke that's been thrown about on social media. And, of course, because it's SEC Media Days and we ask the most ridiculous, off-the-wall, stupid questions, Ryan had to field a question about it. And here's how that went.
I never thought coming here today, you know, these last couple of days, that people would talk about aura. First off, I don't know what the hell that means. Like I said, if it's about fashion, all that stuff, certainly have no aura. But if it's about having a presence about yourself, those that are around me know that at least I'm a genuine, real dude. And I think you talk to our players, they get a presence around me, they get it. And if aura means being cool, doing all those things, well, listen, I got a hot wife for a reason, right? I mean, I can get down, I can recite, you know, Notorious B.I.G. lyrics. I can recite, whatever you want me to do, you know, let's go. But I've got enough aura. Enough to find ways to win football games, and that's all that matters.
All right, so he's got a hot wife. He can get down, and he can recite Notorious B.I.G. lyrics. Connor, here's the question I have. If he would have just said Biggie, how much more aura would that answer have had? Notorious B.I.G., the full name? We're going Notorious B.I.G. Yeah. And I'll tell you this, man. I was in an offensive line room with that guy for 2 years. I would come in very early in the morning, and yes, Biggie would be on. At 6 a.m. every single day. We get a little bone thugs, thuggish, ruggish bones, 6 a.m.
As you should.
Every day to get us ready to go watch some film so we can get out on the practice field. I think the truth of the matter is this aura stuff is a bit of a joke, but in the end of the day, if people are taking it serious, aura does not win football games in the SEC. You know what wins football games in the SEC? Players. And I think the biggest challenge that Ryan Silverfield has to take on is kind of twofold at Arkansas. One, they have to unlock money that they have not been able to unlock for the athletic department in general. He talked about Walmart money. He wants to get Walmart more involved, and they have not been as involved as I think that athletic department wants. But I think, two, and I think Sam Pittman dealt with this at the very end as well, you do have to have to deal with the Cal effect. The John Calipari effect is real. Arkansas basketball is thriving. It's a basketball school at the moment. I think that's the truth. And we saw it at Memphis. We saw it at Kentucky. We've seen it anywhere John Calipari has been. Being able to fundraise and convince the athletic department heads to give you money over him is always a very, very tough deal. So I think he has to deal with that. We don't need to worry about aura right now. Because based on what I have heard, based on what I have seen from football spending, from a football spending perspective strictly, Arkansas is bottom one or bottom two in the SEC, and I don't even think it's particularly close. So he's got to get over that hump to get this program where it needs to go. Now, I will say, while we're flaming him for not having aura, there was one answer today And it had to do with Alex Golish and John Sumrall, who, over the last couple of years, Ryan was 5-1 against. 5-1 against those guys who are now coaches, of course, in the SEC at Auburn and Florida, respectively. So he was asked about it, and the doubt that he's getting from even Hog fans about what he can actually get accomplished at Arkansas. Here's that exchange.
The Hogs have been at the bottom of predictions of most preseason rankings. You're at the bottom of most coach rankings. And we know that you're about to take a break from social media, too. You've told us that. And you have a 5-1 record against the coaches in this league, 5-1 record against Power 4 teams in general. What would you say to those who are doubting you and the Arkansas program going into the season?
Well, that's great. Keep doubting me. What'd you say my record was against the coaches in this conference?
5-1, Coach.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that's great. I won't throw the podium at you, so I appreciate that. People have the right to feel a certain way, and that's okay. I've been doubted my whole life.
The Hogs.
If you paid attention there, obviously he said, I've been doubted my whole life, 5-1, asked for him to repeat that. Yeah, I love that, love hearing that. But then he said, I won't throw the podium. A very clear and direct shot at John Sumrall, who heard a phone in the crowd yesterday at SEC Media Days and said, about through this podium. So a little bit of trash talk. I think we could use that answer as definition of maybe a little bit of aura for Ryan Silverfield. No, just a tad bit, not a lot, just a tad bit. You know, it's my guy, so I'm gonna try to help him out here on the airwaves here in Memphis today.
We've just got to teach him how to say aura. He was saying or. I got or.
I got or. But yeah, I mean, that 5-1 record that he lauded and asked for repeating on, brother, in the end of the day, that ain't going to help you this year. Connor, there's a couple of facts worth mentioning about this Arkansas program. 80 new players, only 55% on offense and defense returning production. That's good for 11th out of 16 in the SEC. And here's the biggest. They have the worst and, well, I should say best, hardest strength of schedule in the entire FBS. The hardest. And Arkansas usually is up there at the top. I don't know, like Hunter, you're a check. They're AD, brother, do something about this. I felt like Sam Pittman dealt with this his entire tenure, and Ryan immediately upon stepping foot there has to deal with it. I will say, you know, for Memphis fans bagging on him today, one thing he's not shying away from is a challenge, because year one at the very least is going to be a challenge. Connor, I just want to do this for, you know, giggles, okay? Let's go through their schedule, W's and L's. The number one hardest strength of schedule in the FBS. Let's get it done. At home versus North Alabama.
Win.
W.
Yeah.
Week two immediately on ESPN 915, traveling all the way to the West Coast to play Utah. Absolute L. I'm sorry. I'm not buying that. If they win that, we completely recalibrate expectations for the amount of SEC wins they'll have this year. But on the road at Utah in Salt Lake City at 9:15 at night, yeah, I'm not buying that one. So let's go L. Week three, at home, bright and early, ABC, 11 a.m. versus Georgia.
I'm going to go with an L.
L. Tulsa, win.
A win.
At home, 7 p.m., SEC Network. Now, this is where it really gets trouble, because they were 2-10 last year. At that point, through four weeks, we have them at 2-2. At A&M, L.
L.
Home versus Tennessee. L.
I think it's an L. I think it's an L.
At Vandy. L.
Probably an L.
Home versus Mizzou.
What's Mizzou looking like next year?
They have a quarterback that they really like in Matt Zollers. They have Ahmad Hardy coming back, even though he's got the gunshot wound right now, but he was the leading rusher in the SEC and basically in the country last year. I probably chalked that up as an L. At Auburn. With Byron Brown, he's got familiarity with Alex Golish, but you're at Auburn. I'm going with an L. Versus South Carolina is where I stopped, and I said, okay, can we get our third win of the season with three games left? Can we get that done? Can we get to three wins with two games left to play? Because his final two games, Connor, versus LSU. I think the realistic outlook, if you're just trying to be as conservative as possible, is probably another 2-10 season. But if you have some hope, maybe 3-9, maybe 4-8.
Right. I think that's fair.
With that, the question has to be asked, what is success for Ryan in year one? Because I want to be very clear. I don't think, as long as it doesn't look like Chad Morris, Arkansas, okay, I don't think on the field is going to be the difference he can make this year, quite frankly. You can be more competitive. Sure, we expect that. But from a W's and L's standpoint, I don't think it'll look much different than last year because that strength of schedule, that schedule right there is the hardest in the country. So what do we have to look for from Arkansas in year one under Ryan to say, okay, I feel positive about where they're headed? I think it's a lot more abstract. I don't think you need to look at the win column to try to judge Ryan in year one. And that's not me saying that as a friend. That's me saying it as a realist. He's not winning more games than he's losing this year. It's just not going to happen. You turn over the roster. You're not able to get the type of caliber of recruits that everybody else is getting right now because your money's at the bottom of the conference. So I think trying to unlock some fundraising, trying to at least create some type of culture, even though that's kind of a buzzword, and I'm telling you right now, I'm using that as a buzzword, creating some type of culture behind the scenes. I think those are the things in year one that Ryan needs to get accomplished. And then hopefully he can win one more game than last year. Although, looking at the schedule, that's going to be tough.
I think that's a very fair outlook for their season next year. The good news is he usually performs better in games where he is an underdog. The problem is he underperforms in games where he's the favorite. So you
don't
know,
lose to North Alabama.
Just don't
Tulsa.
Lose to North Alabama and Tulsa, and you know it should be that. An OKC for
don't
all,
Chad Morris this thing. Don't go full Chad Morris.
Right.
Never
right.
go full Chad Morris.
Never go full Morris.
All right. Now Lane Kiffin was up there today, and I'm sure you've seen some of it, Connor.
I have.
We'll play a little bit of it. Very tame. Nothing. Besides the opening statement that he spent like 2,400 words on, and I was just like, dude, wrap it up. Come on, let's get it going. We don't want to hear you talk that much. I know you want to hear yourself talk that much, but we don't want to hear it. I thought he was tame. I think he said he's taking a break from social media, and he's trying to stay out of all that stuff, which I don't know how long that'll actually last. He said he had a bet with his son, Knox, about how long he'd stay off. He says he's won that bet already. But he did at least address one of the biggest reasons he left from Ole Miss to go to LSU, and obviously it had to do with recruiting. Here's what he had to say.
Now you have 12 players with Nike NIL deals, the first offensive lineman ever. No other schools above 8. We didn't say like 12, 11. We didn't say just SEC schools. So it's a big reason why we're here. When I said that first press conference, like, it's just different. We're going to make this thing different than anywhere else to go when you combine LSU and us, and you're seeing it. You know, we just on stage had that question in the Vanity Fair and all that, whatever, and as I walked off and, you know, I didn't really want to say it, but, you know, when you talk about the changes of places, somebody said it the other day. They said, like, a month ago or whatever, they were like, well, he's been here 6 months, and he's had more five-star signees and commits than he did in the previous 6 years combined. You know, that's kind of proof to me of the decision and of the combination of the two, us and LSU.
Forgive me for saying this. I'm not saying that Lane Kiffin is turning into Nick Saban, but that's kind of the Nick Saban process and thought process around the time Lane Kiffin was making his decision to go LSU. He said the same things. Now, I know Ole Miss fans are going to hear that and say, well, Coach Pete's doing pretty good on the recruiting trail, you know, and they've won a lot of games at Ole Miss. Lane, you recruited pretty well at Ole Miss, did really well in the transfer portal. But at risk of pissing off my Ole Miss friends, he's telling the truth, guys. That's just a fact of life. LSU is a way easier place to recruit than Ole Miss. I don't think it's for the reasons that he said in Vanity Fair about how it has a racist background, because LSU has its own racist background, and we understand that part of it. It's a Southeastern Conference, for God's sakes. I think all those schools have their history. But here are the facts. What he said about the amount of five stars he signed in the last 6 months, outdoing anything he did previous, he signed the number one transfer portal quarterback in Sam Leavitt. He signed the number one transfer portal tackle in Jordan Seaton. He signed two wide receivers who caught for over 700 yards at their last stops at the FBS level. He brought over T.J. Dottery, who was one of the best linebackers in the portal last year. Granted, he had his hands on him at Ole Miss. He just followed him. Winston Watkins, same thing. He was one of the best wide receivers out there on the portal. I think it's just a fact of life until something dramatic changes. LSU is a much easier place to recruit and win at than Ole Miss on a year-to-year basis. That doesn't mean that Ole Miss isn't going to be better than LSU this year. That's not what I'm saying. But the caliber of talent you get at LSU, certainly year-to-year, is better, and it's always been that way. And it's just something you have to accept. Now, something he can't accept. Let's get to the strength of schedule clip. Go ahead and run this. Lane Kiffin talking about strength of schedule and how teams in the SEC should be treated around college football playoff committee time.
I just think that it's going to cause issues that we've already seen until we can get to a world where people can actually look at teams and say, that team that is 9-3 with their schedule is a better team than that 11-1 in a different conference, which now I think we aren't even close to doing that. I think it causes a problem.
That's so reductionist. It's not even funny. Like, tell me who you lost to. Tell me who you beat. Don't just say, I won 9 games in the SEC. I'm better than the ACC team that won 10 games. No. Who did you lose to? Who did you beat? Let's have real conversations about that before, because I'm not just going to give you credit for strength of schedule if you lost to the teams that were better than you. If all of your good games, all of the strength games on your schedule were losses, why am I supposed to give you credit for that? Because you won 9 games where you were favored? No! That's not how any of this works. And just a fun fact, shout out to Shehan Jayaraj. We're going to get him on the show soon. He's from CBS Sports. And this is a fun fact. Texas last year, which was one of kind of the biggest points of contention for the SEC, preseason number one, peaking at the end of the year, Arch Manning's playing like he should. A fun fact, Texas would have still missed the CFP in 2025 if it was